Crack open a cold box of wine or pour something cold on ice because it's the Binge Watchers Podcast.
Humanoid from the Deep was the last movie that Dave and I watched in person together, I think. But then we tried to watch a couple things, and there was this thing called Rabbit, but that was before they started doing, like, group watch on Disney Plus and, like, party on Netflix. Like, Rabbit was like, log into your accounts and all your friends can come in and watch it. And we tried to Rabbit a couple times. We tried to Rabbit, I think, Groundhog's Day. It didn't quite work, and then we tried to
do it
for Predator 2, and it kind of screwed up the sound on Predator 2, you know? We tried to throw a commentary episode together, and it kind of blew out the stereo on us, so, you know. Hey, lesson learned, folks. Don't use this app named Rabbit.
Yeah.
I don't even think it exists sponsored anymore.
Yeah, it's gone, just like,
I think it's
what's that? Time. What's that vertical TV app that just disappeared?
Quibi?
Yeah, QB's gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
$1 billion experiment. I hope the Reno 911 guys got some real cash out of that deal. Because they had the best show going on there.
Yeah. I hope so.
Let's see here. All right, we're going to start talking about feel-good movies. So for the audience that's following along at home, Collins Dictionary or Dictionary.com defines a feel-good movie as a film which presents people and life in a way that makes the people who watch it feel happy and optimistic. But before we talk about gung-ho, let's go to home video headlines and see what we've heard about movies and TV. Probably the biggest headline is Sean Connery died. I mean, dude lived to 90. I mean, that's got to be a pretty fulfilled life.
That's a pretty good life, man.
Yeah, pretty good life. Starred in a ton of movies. One of the greatest actors of all time. Considered a man's man. Basically, generally got the respect of every other man on the planet. So, anybody, while also being nice to women, I don't think there's a bad story of the dude. There's no Me Too Sean Connery stories out there, as far as I know.
Absolutely. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Interview from the 80s. Where
oh,
he talks
man.
About flash
you know what's funny about this? Like, if you're listening to audio, you can't see the expression on Dave's face that I just created, but
shocked.
If you're watching the video version, then you're gonna kick out of that one. we're just gonna go around the room and talk about like our favorite Sean Connery movies. Let's start with Nick. You got a couple that you like from dear old Sir Sean Connery.
I have two, but I'll just go with Hunt for Red October. That was like freaking incredible, and he's so good in that movie. And it's a great movie. I watched it like a year ago. It still holds up.
What movie?
Hunt for Red October.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's like my least favorite Sean Connery movie.
John, I'm gonna
I think I said that too when I was talking about watching, being obsessed with all these submarine dramas, and that one disappointed me, you know. A lot of hype. You know, some titles get so famous, there's like a lot of hype, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, Dave, didn't you recently watch Scarface?
No.
No, that
no,
wasn't
I
on your
recently
list of
watched,
like getting
I think Chinatown, which is what you gave me crap.
Oh, I remember Chinatown.
Oh yeah. Dave has a few golden oldies that he's got to get to, and all right. So, Dave, what's one of your favorite Sean Connery movies, or a few? I mean, it could be more than one. It doesn't have to be one. It could be whatever.
I'm gonna give you two, and they're both from '96. And these, these are kind of obvious, but like these two, I saw, I think, at the drive-in when I was that age. It came out, but Dragonheart and The Rock, like those, hold a special place for me because I mean, those came out in the same summer. Like
Wait,
I said, I saw
the
at the drive-in.
Yeah, he's
what's that?
Oh, I totally forgot about
that. Yeah, wow. Yeah. And that goes to show how good of an actor he was, because it was just a voice performance, but like, damn, if you're not welling up at the end of that movie, I'm just saying, like, music kicks in, and you're like, oh God, it's a dragon, but no. So,
is it a feel-good, too?
It is.
Dragonheart? It's redeemable. It's redemptive, right? Yeah. It can be considered a feel-good movie, for sure. Adam, we're over to you. You got a few Sean Connery movies that you like?
Yeah, when I was younger, I read this like Rudyard Kipling story, The Man Who Would Be King or whatever. It's about these two like British guys that end up, you know, trying to take over a small country, being like evil little statists, and they like subjugate the people. And it's like, it's a commentary on British imperialism. And Sean Connery was in the movie version of it, 1975, with Michael Caine. It's kind of a, you know, strange pick, but it's worth a watch. It's very peculiar. It's a very interesting film. And the other one is Time Bandits, a Terry Gilliam, or early Terry Gilliam movie.
King Agamemnon.
A lot of people don't realize Sean Connery's even in that movie, and it's so like, whoa. And he plays this, you know, generous king that takes the boy under his wing, and a vital role in that movie. And it was probably as a child, probably the first time I saw Sean Connery not in a 007 movie. So those are my picks.
Yeah. I kind of said, I'll second Adam's Man Who Would Be King. I almost picked that myself, but that's like a really good underseen movie of his.
Yeah, he's in a lot of James Bond movies. Like, he's like the number one guy that played James Bond besides, what's his name?
Roger Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but he's also, his last James Bond movie was, he said he would never do it again, and his wife came up with the title, Never Say Never Again, was literally the last James Bond that he was in. And it kind of leans itself to a little bit of comedy, right? Here's my list. Also Dragonheart. I love Dragonheart. But I also have League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where he plays Alan Quartermain, the skilled hunter who has to lead, like, all the monsters and go after like all the baddies and that. And they tried to make that
into, was
like,
his last movie, right?
Movie series. Yeah. Yeah, it was one of his last ones, yeah.
He hated the production of that, by the way. No, he did.
He did good. I mean, he said, like, he doesn't understand, like, superhero movies. Like, they offered him to play, like, maybe, I don't know who it was, Aragorn or Gandalf. Gandalf. Like, in Lord of the Rings. Yeah. And he's like, his quote is like, I don't understand this. Look at this. He passed. But the poor guy got dementia. So who knows what happened first, dementia or passing on that movie. I also like him in, okay, I mean, this is like definitely a flight of fancy, and you got to suspend your disbelief because he's not a Spaniard, and it's hard to believe he's a Spaniard, but his name was Ramirez. He still had a Scottish accent in the Highlander series. He's the mentor of the main immortal. He teaches, he teaches Connor. I think it's Connor McLeod is first, and then Duncan comes. Yeah, teaches Connor McLeod how to be an immortal, and then battles the Kurgan in the original. But then he gets brought back in the second one with a little bit of magic, time travel, whatever you want to say it is. But anyway, and last but not least, I think this is the one he won the Academy Award for, is Untouchables, right? He plays an Irish beat cop who gets assigned to like the first branch of the FBI or whatever it is, and they're like going after Capone, right, in Chicago or whatever, and he teaches the guys the Chicago way.
Chicago.
Yeah, but we're not talking about, well, we're not spending the whole night talking about Sean Connery movies. It could be an episode. Yeah, there definitely could be a retrospective. But tonight's movie is Gung Ho from 1986. It's a Ron Howard movie. Last year, Dave and I actually did a pretty decent run of Ron Howard stuff. When we talked about Willow, we did mention Backdraft. We did talk about a little bit about Gung Ho. It's definitely a feel good movie pick for me, and that's why I threw it out for today's episode. Being up to bat with the selections, that's just something that came down to the wire, and it's like, let's do this movie. It's also called Working Class Man, like in the UK and Australia, as it gets released. But essentially, an American auto worker who was like a foreman at a clothes plant spends his own money to go to Japan and convince a Japanese automobile company to go and reopen the plant in his hometown. He's convinced his whole town that it's a good idea because they're all rooting for him to do it. And it's, of course, played by Michael Keaton, the guy who can deliver false promises like no other person in the history of comedic acting.
Especially in that time, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, at like the top of his game, he flies off to Japan to convince this auto company, and they buy into his BS because they go and reopen the factory on the promise that, like, you make a certain amount of cars, we'll keep the factory open. If they don't, no raise, no union, we close the plant forever, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like a class of cultures. You bring in the Japanese executives, they have their own thing, and like we see that right in the beginning of the movie, the differences. And but what's funny about this movie is business schools, economics classes, and Toyota training uses this as basically they say, like, this is how not to manage Americans. That's Toyota plays this to their executives, right? This
movie. I read that.
And then, yeah, and then business schools over here will also watch this movie and examine it. But some interesting trivia is, like, the factory is realistic. They were actually building Fiats, two types of Fiats, the Regata and the Spazio, in Argentina. So they spent, like, a number of weeks down at a real auto plant that had been closed, and they reopened it for the movie. Supposedly, the screenwriter Edward Blum was watching 60 Minutes about, you know, Asian companies coming in and buying out American companies, or American companies that were in the dumps, like revitalizing them with foreign money. And but then it was like, there's another screenwriter. I've never even heard of this lady. Her name is Diane Asimov-Simon. Put out like a counterclaim saying, oh, no, that's my story. Like, Ed Blum didn't come up with this story or whatever. But we get a great movie either way. I don't know what the conflict is with who actually came up with the story, but we're going to end up with a really good movie. And Ged Watanabe, who is a Japanese-American from Ogden, Utah, of all places. I didn't know he was from Utah. He's also in, like, a couple of the teen movies from the 80s, right?
It's like Pretty in Pink. No, no.
16 Candles.
16 Candles.
There you go. So he's well-known from that. I didn't know he grew up in Utah, but he does. And you obviously get the supporting cast is mixed with some comedians and some people you might know, like George Wendt, you might recognize from Cheers. Rick Overton is a comedian, but he's also in here. Mimi Rogers.
John Turturro.
Yeah, John Turturro running out the
very
front.
Young,
yeah.
John Turturro.
Yeah, very young. Yeah.
The guy that I like also is the little guy, the little short pudgy guy who wanted to leave work to go because his wife was in labor.
Oh, I love that guy. Yeah.
His name is Ito. The character's name is Ito, and he's like dancing towards the end. But his name is Rodney Kijiyama, and he's actually from San Francisco. So what's funny is they were able to get, like, you know. Like, you talk about casting and, like, people, like, not casting the right people, but this is a good group of, like, Japanese-American actors that have some talent, and also, like, comedic actors at the time that were kind of, like, coming into their own. Like, I think at that time, like, Michael Keaton had only stopped doing, like, stand-up comedy maybe for a couple of years. Because he started out, you guys know this, Keaton started out in, like stand-up.
And everything he did was comedy.
Yeah. So they just did a Comedy Store documentary. He's actually in there. He does a huge interview with Mike Binder. That just came out.
I'm excited to see it now.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think that's all the major cast. Well, the guy playing Sato, who's like a sadistic little jerk, the nephew of the main executive, like the guy who owns the company, right? Who wants to take over.
Oh, yeah.
You know, get Watanabe's character's job. His name is Sato or whatever. That's it. I mean, I think I described the movie well enough. Essentially, American auto plant down on its dumps. They want to reopen it. This guy has – the main character makes a lot of promises, like a good salesman, and he's got to convince the Japanese executives to work with them, and they got to try to work with them. And him and the other – him and Ged Watanabe's characters are kind of in a bad situation. You know what I mean? They have a hard road ahead of them, but I think that's why, like, they're relatable to each other, convincing, like, both sets of workers to pull together. But let's go to first impressions. I know I'm kind of overselling this movie because I like this movie a lot, so I want to try to convince the audience to watch it at least once. Go to first impressions. Let's jump over to Nick. What's your first impressions of Gung Ho?
I got two things. One, this is Ron Howard, right? If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was neat. I mean, I loved his 80s movies. He was such a great, you forget how many good movies this guy made in the 80s, you know. And also Michael Keaton, he steals the show in this thing, and just his performance. And I just forgot what a great, like, almost comical actor he was, but still he was about to go to, like, a different level. That's fair.
Okay, cool. I was seeing if you had like a last thought on it. Like, all right. I was like, that was dramatic. It was suspenseful for a second.
It was okay. What happened? It was like, no, the internet died.
Dave, do you got a dangerous first impression for us on this one?
I don't know if it's dangerous, but I have a first second impression because I think I saw this movie like one time when I was a kid. So I don't know, figure like five. And I have one memory, which will come up later, of the movie. But so I kind of watched it with fresh eyes. Great movie. This movie is so fun. And it breathes a lot, you know, it kind of moves along fast. Michael Keaton has a lot of charisma. All the secondary characters, you know. This also has, you know, the secondary characters actually have third dimensions to them. You know, they're not, they don't just feel like just shoving them in there for a plot point. I don't know. The characters felt lived in. I really liked this movie. I had a fun time with it. I felt good.
Yeah, there you go.
Feel good.
I think you probably took Adam's first impression there.
Yeah. It made me feel appreciative of, you know, having a job. Like, you know, maybe you want more people to have jobs and taking pride in your work and forging relationships with people in the workplace. It made you feel so good emanating from like this supposed fiction, but I don't know. The whole thing felt real. Like we were watching these people's lives, you know, I don't feel like anything was overacted or anything. So that's, you know, I felt good.
Slice of life from Double A.
Yeah.
My first impression, if I think back, I've seen this movie now a handful of times, maybe more than three, but less than seven, somewhere in between five or six times. What I think about my first impression was just it had a good cast and it had a good story. That's what keeps bringing me back is the cast and the story. And I think ultimately, like, the cast may do well in another movie in that with that same amount of chemistry if they're put in the right scenario. You know what I mean? It is almost a situation comedy, but on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's it. Great cast. If I had a simple first impression, I would just be the people that are in the movie. Wow. Okay. So we'll be right back after these messages. Tonight, we're actually sponsored by Mack Weldon, which is a clothing company. They are trying to establish some kind of new normal for everyone that's out there. And they want to bring you casual buttons up and jeans and knit polos. They got you covered with the unmatched comfort and fit. My experience with Mack Weldon is I ordered these super, super, super comfortable socks that come in these little packages here. And they have a great title for their underwear, 18-hour jerseys. I don't know if you can actually wear them for 18 hours. I don't recommend that. But they are pretty damn comfortable. So if you're looking for quality stuff at reasonable prices, and, you know, I'm a working class guy, but when you put these on, you feel like $1 million if that's your thing. So they got socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, polos. They promise comfort and a consistent fit. So far, I've been pretty damn comfortable. They look great. They feel great for everyday life. They got a wide range of custom fabrics. They actually have a loyalty program. You have to look into that. It's called Weldon Blue. They guarantee you're going to be comfortable. For 20% off your first order, you can go to MackWeldon.com/BingeWatchers. Enter promo code BingeWatchers. That's MackWeldon.com/BingeWatchers. Promo code BingeWatchers for 20% off. Mack Weldon, who's reinventing men's basics. And that's it for these messages, because all you get, guys, is 30 seconds. You don't get any more. That's the way it works around here. Trying to have a show. Trying to run a show.
Can we see the folks?
You want to see the underwear?
Yeah.
It's been a request to see these 18-hour...
And John, can you describe them? Very sexy, like.
Yeah. If you're listening at home, if you're only on the audio journey with us, the audio adventure, classic way to listen is not to watch, but just to listen. I'll describe them. So I don't know. It's kind of a somber blue gray, maybe a navy blue here. We got some nice pinstriping on the trim here, and like it's not breezy. They are tight. They do hug the boys. But, you know, you feel comfort in knowing that your boys are taken care of. So
the boys are out.
I would suggest get 20% off that Mack Weldon. And now we're discussing a movie. I guess I should pull my movie notes back up.
Yeah, they look nice.
Yeah, Nick, you missed the boat on the Mack Weldon. You missed it by like days.
Yes,
I did.
I had a lot of work that week. I don't know.
Forget it. Adam got some Mack Weldon, I think.
I know. That's what
they're in the mail.
Oh, they're still in the mail. Just like your gummies.
I mean, they're never showing up. Right.
Folks, if you don't know, I just recalled the story from a couple episodes ago. I don't know if you know of our relationship with the Sunday Scaries, which is a vitamin company, which you can also get if you go to our website under our special offers. You can look up our vitamin deal. But Adam's been waiting for a bag to show up forever. I don't know if it's ever going to happen.
I finished around like 2 months ago. Yeah,
I'm still checking the mailbox as often as possible. I just have to be out of town right now, but... I'm sure they're not in there. I'm just...
Now that I've thrown off some underwear, did a crappy recall
bit. For themselves.
I'm worried about that. I think...
You know what's going to be hard about the next category, guys? Is picking your favorite bits from a movie that's full of, like, great scenes. And potentially almost every scene is a favorite bit for somebody. Nick, yeah. Do you have a favorite bit or two from this movie?
I'm just giving you the gist, but I don't want to ruin this, but the end when they deliver all the cars and then the cars are not perfect.
Well, you can just say the ending is well earned. You know, like it's
an it is well earned, but you know what I mean? I thought it was really good, but you know, the cars aren't like perfectly put together, but they delivered, sure. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had a big order. I mean, they're like, give us 60,000 cars by the end of the month.
And I like that order. I like that. Like Michael Keane and all the guys, they all work together as a team. And there's so many bosses I've had that like, they just stand in the corner and then they blame you when shit goes wrong. And you're like, no, I like that. He was working his ass off. I thought that was beautiful. It made you feel good, as this is saying.
Yeah, when the Japanese executives were down there on the same line and everybody comes together, it was really an emotional swelling point for me. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I cried at the end. Like, I was so happy.
It's a great movie. It was a really great movie.
Cry, like, though. It wasn't like, oh, I'm so sad. No, I was crying. Like there's good in the world, and like people can come together and overcome their differences. And it made me feel really good on the inside. Yeah. And so what a great call. This movie was like, it did everything it was supposed to do. So
audience, Adam's actually crying right now. If you can't see the video,
all right. The most sentimental thing that gets me is when his friend gets in trouble, when George Wendt character Buster gets in trouble, and he's literally handing him a broom, saying, "You can't quit your job, dude. You're like, you got two kids. You can't quit your job." You're about to face like maybe the most embarrassing thing in a job environment that you've ever faced, but like. I mean, being a dad, like literally, like the first thing you do when you wake up is eat shit. Like that's your breakfast, eating shit. You know what I mean? That's a pretty they did such a great job in that scene. I don't know how they got both actors to that level, but like them giving it to each other in that scene, Michael Keaton and George Wendt. That's like that. You could show that scene in acting class or something, or directing class. Like, just study this 5 minutes right here. Look at the business he's bringing. Look at the business he's bringing. And all they had was a fucking broom. you know what I mean? Like, it's great stuff.
I really love George Wendt's determination. He was really in that moment, in that scene. Mm. Like, I don't know. I wasn't thinking about watching the movie. I was watching it on my computer and I was lost in it. That's crazy. Yeah. Like, there's a whole world going on around you. And George is definitely walking.
You know? Well, I think that's where Ron Howard's strength as a director comes in, because he was an actor. Because honestly, this movie isn't a flashy movie. Like, we can talk about how great this movie is, but nothing about the look of it stands out to me. But it's the acting and the characters and all that. Because it's kind of a drab looking movie when you really think about it. It's very like brown.
You know? Well, it's not dressed up.
It's immersive because it's not flashy.
The most dynamic shots are obviously like the factory equipment
in this one.
Yeah.
There's a look on George Wendt's face in that movie where they're all in the hospital and the guy's getting taken care of, and they just found out that, like, you know, he lied, and they cut to George Wendt's look on his face. Oh my gosh, did I believe that look?
Okay, so we got to put a little more story in to explain the picture. So essentially, there's a false promise made to the American workers by their leader, the Michael Keaton character, and he says, by the end of the month, we got to turn in 13,000 cars, we get a partial raise, when the real deal is, hit that 15,000 mark, you get your full raise, and we'll talk about bringing in your union benefits. And that's another critical scene that I'm talking about, like, when they realize that, like, they've been working towards a goal that doesn't exist. It's pretty... And they've been betrayed by somebody that they've known for, like, 20 years. So that's another big moment. Which falls into our favorite bit, that's for sure, I don't know if we're stopping over anybody else's favorite bits. So, Dave, let's get into yours in case we might have walked on them. But, you know.
I think Nick might be saying the same thing I'm thinking. I'm going to go spoiler alert for a 35-year-old movie. But, like, the last kind of joke of the movie, like, Michael Keaton's so pissed off at the guy. He says, you know, hey, no, I'm taking this car. Here's my old car. I'm driving this one off the line. And turns over, he's like, all right, I'm in the clear. 5 feet, and the tires fall off. He falls back.
Bumper falls off.
It's a great slapstick moment in a movie. Like, you kind of needed that joke right before everything else happens.
Yes.
Wow.
So funny.
Like, well, my part,
that he, like, moment he watched I remembered a, as a kid. Like, I remembered that one moment. But
me too. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Right before that, he like pretended to wax a fake windshield that wasn't there. Right? He said that the windshield was attached to the car.
And he's
trying to finish like the last five cars of the 15,000 or whatever, you know. But that's funny. You stole my spoiler thunder. Look at that, Dave. You took a spoiler from Johnny Spoilers. Like, that's hilarious. I don't have any spoilers. Like, here, I'm going to go to my favorite bits now. The river thing, they had a ritual where they were bathing in the river all the time. The Japanese executives, and then at one point, Michael Keaton joins them. Anybody baseball fans? Am I the only baseball fan? I'm like riveted by the American versus the Japanese executives. There's a baseball scene, right? There's a company baseball scene, which sets up the conflict between the one executive and the George Went character, which sets off the whole thing with the broom, like we were talking about. The bar scene.
Slow mo.
Oh, what's a slow mo? Oh,
no, there's lots of slow mo and the baseball stuff. They did some fancy stuff for, you know, the sports movie stuff got incorporated in that little segment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an action movie for about 3 seconds or 10 seconds.
Yeah. Finally, something looked like, oh, that looked kind of cool. Future
movie had great montages, like let's work together montages, which, again.
The movie starts out with a great montage.
Like, so, I mean, we know it's a heartfelt.
In Japan.
Yeah. They spent a considerable amount in Japan, actually, taking Michael Keaton. They were really in Japan. You know, like, they didn't fake it. They didn't soundstage it. They sent the actors to Japan, which is really another unique thing that a movie does. Like, when a movie does real things, it's just always so much better, right?
You can always tell.
Yeah, you can tell. You can tell.
The pressure's CGI, on, too.
Mm-hmm.
What? The pressure's on?
The pressure's on. You spend the budget. You got them all the way there. Like, all right, do your thing. I mean, it's real then.
Yeah.
Run around with the... I don't know, the whole Japan scene was really interesting. Who knows where they filmed that? Maybe that was also in Japan. I'm thinking it was probably here because it was inside. But
you're talking about the boardroom scene.
Yeah.
That's another great bit because like it predates Google, like turning on and off everything by like 30 years, and him freaking out every time.
The lights
got like lights down, lights up.
Yeah, there's a computer voice commands in the boardroom triggering everything,
and they're already setting the stage for like in cinema for the Japanese to be ahead of us on everything.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of intriguing because they were thinking about that at the time, right? With Walkmans and all this stuff, you know, things they didn't have. Clap on, clap off.
Can I talk about my favorite scene? Or are we moving on? What are we doing?
I thought your guys kind of were weaving in and out of them, but we're at Double A. His official favorite scene
is the fall from grace of our beloved main character when Michael Keaton's on the stage, and he's excitedly telling them the deal that he has made for like they're going to beat the Japanese record or whatever. They're going to make 15,000 cars. And 1 month, which is probably a huge ramp up. You don't really know all the numbers in the movie. But then the discussion amongst the guys like, hey, like, that's impossible. Like, you know, like weren't you advocating for us? And then he feels the pressure and then they start coming up with numbers and he's like agreeing with it. And like, because it's easy to do that under the pressure instead of just like, no, guys, we got to hit 15 and we can. And I told him you could. He doesn't go all the way. He has a lapse in confidence, and that lapse in confidence leads to a moral compromise, and then it creates the snowball. And he's like, "Yeah, but don't think about that number. Pretend I didn't." He's trying to minimize the lie that he just told, you know, because all he did was really agree with them, and he shouldn't have done that. And the reason I love that part of the movie is just because it's like the turnkey moment for setting up so much other stuff, and I think everyone has been put in a position like that before. And sometimes you just have to man up and be like, no, you know, 13. Mm. No, I did advocate for you guys. It's 15 and you can, but for whatever reason, there's like a little moral failing. And then we got lots of drama out of it. And for a writer, I mean, that's cool too.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was a good segue earlier because we were talking about heartfelt moments, but another heartfelt moment or another heartfelt thing that happened this week was we got a fan letter or email, and I guess this guy's been tuning in for a while. He's never communicated with us before. Sent us an email about a movie he'd like us to cover in the future, and his name's actually Nick, but it's not our Nick. It's another Nick. I'm not going to read his last name. You know, I'll leave it out. Basically, I'm just going to read it. I'm going to read it for the whole audience because I think it's pretty unique. So here we go. Hi, guys. My name's Nick, and a while back, I stumbled across a movie I never heard of. It completely blew me away, and so I've been desperately trying to convince everyone across movie fandom to give it a shot and hopefully drag it out of complete obscurity. The movie's called The Beast of War, a.k.a. The Beast, from 88, directed by Kevin Reynolds, starring George Zamunda, Jason Patrick, and Stephen Bauer. It's only been released in 2 screens across the whole of the U.S. by Columbia Pictures, and I kid you not when I say it's the best Hollywood film you've never heard of. Quentin Tarantino's old writing partner, Roger Avery, has it down as the best movie of 88 on Letterboxd. That's an app. That's where people, like, this is not part of his letter. I'm just explaining what Letterboxd is for anybody who doesn't know. It's an app where you can, like, rank the movies that you've seen. Mm-hmm. Just kind of a fanboy thing. And then now back to this letter. So he says, also, it's been given a rating of 7.3 on IMDb, 3.5 on Letterboxd, but not a single critic's review on Rotten Tomatoes, but it does have an audience score of 84%. A couple of podcasts have reviewed it, and favorably, they've called it War Horse versus War Machine on the something like the Retro Movie Geeks podcast. I'm not familiar with those guys. The latter, on the basis of my recommendation, is I continue to pester Criterion to do something to save this movie from continual obscurity, but I can no longer get anything back from them. Oh well. Please seek this film out. It's available on DVD and streaming, so it won't be difficult to track down. If you do see it, let me know if you agree with me that it might be one of the best 10 American movies of the 1980s. One way or another, we need to find a way to raise this movie's profile and prevent it from continual obscurity once and for all. And then he asked us to check out the trailer, and he sent us the link. Dude, thanks, Nick, for writing in. We love to hear from the audience. This is your entire section. It's called Questions From Out There. Anything from the audience. You can email us at host@bwpodcast.com. We'd love to hear your stories. We want to know what you're watching so we then can watch them along with you and hear your opinions about the stuff that we're watching every week. So this is a movie about a Russian tank commander's mental breakdown as they get separated from their like main squadron or whatever in like a Middle East conflict. I think it's – do you remember that Tom Hanks did a movie where he was helping like Afghan rebels fight? He was like playing a politician.
Tom Hanks. War.
Yeah,
Tom Wilson's War or whatever it is. So he plays a politician who was like a real Democrat from Texas or something who went to Afghan and he was like helping them, the rebels, fight like Russians in the 80s. And I think this story, The Beast, is like the other side. This is the Russians dealing with the Afghan conflict from their perspective. But this tank unit is separated from the rest of their army or unit or whatever. And they're having a bunch of internal conflicts. It kind of reminds me of like The Fury. You know that tank movie with Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
The World War II movie? But this obviously came out first. Jason Patrick, he's a great actor. He plays a guy that's like is like losing his moral compass because shit gets more and more crazy. I don't know if you guys have ever I mean, The Beast.
I've never heard of it until this letter, but I'm watching the trailer right now in silent, and the visuals look incredible, and I like the director.
I almost said Men in Tights.
I mean, it may have been more timely in the 80s because that was when that direct conflict was going on. I think today, I mean, this is definitely not the month to watch this movie because we're not doing movies of conflict. As Adam said earlier, we're trying to do movies that are bringing people together, that make people feel better about like the way things are. And it would be hard to watch this movie now because you're revisiting like an old conflict. So, like, some things maybe shouldn't be rediscovered. I mean, we'll give it a fair shot. If this guy says it's supposedly one of the best movies of the 80s, we'll investigate. We'll go and see what the deal is.
I remember stocking this on the shelf a lot when I worked at a video store. I always remember seeing it. When he said Jason Patrick, I'm like, oh, I remember that cover. I have a weird mind for that. Even if I haven't seen a movie, I can remember the cover because I used to stock them all the time at the video store.
It looks pretty good. I'm down to check it out.
Adam, what do you think about Nick sending us in his letter and introducing us to this movie?
Well, we'll see if it pans out as a good film. I'm on a feel-good kick. I don't know if I'm going to get a feel good.
You don't think this movie make you feel good?
I don't know. If I don't feel good, I'm going to be like, mm-mm.
If it makes you feel good, wow, you might need to go see a psychologist.
So maybe December or January. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. He said, I mean, what did he say in here? He said it's one of the best movies of the... Of 88, he said.
Yeah, but what kind of best movies? Although there's a lot of different kinds of best movies.
Is it better than Die Hard? Come on.
Sometimes, like, there's
better than Academy Award winning Rain Man.
Feel like crap at the end. We're on the feel good kick, Nick. You guys, you got
which brings us to which brings us to
find a lost feel good movie. I don't know. Maybe it is.
You know, one day, like, we're going to fall apart and not have time to prepare anything. Like, we're not going to have notes. We're not going to have a movie that we watch. And, like, this next segment is going to be the thing that saves the entire episode. What is slowly becoming our personal favorite section, because it's always a surprise. We don't know what each other are watching every week unless we text each other in the middle of the night. Hey, I just watched this. And that kind of shit. This is
if it's in the middle of the night, we're saying hee. I'm assuming it's on Pornhub or something.
Dave, that's what Dave. That's how in my mind. Dave, in my mind,
I'm watching Teehee.
But here's the thing: in my mind, that's how Dave sends every single text message. That's what I hear when he sends his messages to me. Yeah. Especially when he's talking about anime that he loves. I don't know, if I push him too hard, he's gonna bring up the movie that dare not speak its name. So, okay. What else are the binge watchers watching? Let's shoot over to Nick. Nick, what'd you watch this week?
Oh, guys, I watched one of our boys that was on the podcast a while ago. I watched one of his classic 90s movies, Ski School. You guys remember Ski School?
Dude, I know you were going to Dean Cameron. You didn't even have to say his name.
Dude, it's good, man. It's like awesome ski scene, party, bunch of prank stuff like Revenge of the Nerds, and then random softcore sex scene, and then repeat. It's great. I love it. And Dean Cameron is amazing in this, and so is his partner, I think, Stuart Frecken.
I'm just quoting whatever. Nikki Waits for the episode notes here. Random softcore sex.
ski scene. Prank.
Ski scene. Yeah. Skis. Softcore. Everywhere skis.
Ski
yeah.
scene.
Yeah. Ski scene. Yes.
Ski scene.
Dude, guys, watch Ski School. I'm telling you, it holds up great. It's beautiful. It's fun.
Dave, what are you watching?
I actually watched a new movie. I paid $25 to watch The Craft Legacy, and I actually really liked it, surprisingly. I was ready to hate it because I love the first one. I will say this much, it's maybe a remake for the first 15 minutes, and then it does its own thing. So I really liked it. I've seen it get beat up by people online. I say, if you like the original, don't hesitate. It's worth it. I thought so.
That was like a non... You didn't tell us anything about the movie. That's pretty good. You didn't spoil it.
Yeah, I
watched Nothing Burger.
Well, it's also such a new movie. Like, I don't want to go too much into it and spoil something for somebody. It's not like a 35-year-old movie.
Is it as good as the first one?
Time will tell on that. But I was surprising.
Did you hear they ordered a number three? They've already ordered a part three. Did you know that?
I hope they kind of do, because it is called Legacy, and it does tie into the first. It's more of a sidequel. I mean, I guess it is a sequel.
Any characters from the first movie come to this one?
Yes, at the very, very
end. Okay, I'm just trying to figure out.
And there's your spoiler.
I mean, and I'm sorry, like, John kind of figured it out when we were talking about it, and I won't spoil it for people because
it's not in the trailer or anything.
No.
Well, dude, come on. It's another group of girls.
His name is?
Yeah, well, it's you can assume that the main character is the daughter of one of the witches from the previous
movie. I'm assuming so, yeah.
Right? Yeah, that's the tie-in.
And like I said, it was nice because it doesn't fall beat for beat. Like, maybe for 15 minutes, like I said, beat for beat, and then it's its own thing. So it doesn't fall into the same tropes as the first movie after a while. I'm not a teenage girl anymore, so I don't know if this is true to their experience, but I enjoy it.
The one at one point, you said anymore.
Yeah, he's gone through the whole he's gone through his whole thing. He's, what do they call that? I don't know. You've been transformed? He's already done. He's done.
I guess so.
His name didn't used to be David, but, you know, we've been friends. He'll be on the VH1 special, don't we?
I can't wait.
About Dave's life. Okay, let's see. Adam, you really didn't tune into anything. Been a busy guy, huh?
Oh no, I saw some stuff. I watched an old Australian horror movie called Patrick, which is a very an inventive movie for the lack of special effects they had back then, that everything had to be practical. And the movie is basically about a man who's like an invalid and maybe brain dead that has the ability to manipulate his environment. So maybe
Is that on Shudder? He's like, it's a psychic killer, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was interesting, worth watching. But in keeping with good feeling type movies, thanks to Dave, I saw Happy Happy Joy Joy, which is a documentary about Ren and Stimpy and its creation and stuff. And I thought
that's actually a good feel good movie until the last 15.
Yeah. So
Dave,
so I was like, oh, this will
the
be
look
great.
On. You know what though? The look on Dave's
because
face, you can figure out how he got to see that.
We'll know what I'm talking about.
No, I just thought like, because Dave sent Nick, or no, sorry. Dave sent Adam, not Nick. Dave sent Adam a device. The device is logged into all the stuff. And
can
Adam's
you explain
like,
what that is? Because when you just say device.
Yeah, it's one of those cable boxes that has all the channels for free. No, it's a Roku thing. It's like a, you know, a thing to play apps and TV stuff. And so
is that
Dave's
the Android
been kind
one?
To share.
It's X. All right. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Anyway. So
anyway, I thought because it had happy and another happy and a joy and another joy that, it would be a feel good experience. And for the most part it was, but yeah.
So Dave, you're worried that you don't want people to know your side hustle of selling the sex toys. You can't bring that up on the show.
Yeah,
find it on the links page.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Special offer this week, folks. 20% off. Okay. Let's see. Oh, what did I watch? Do you guys ever watch that show Ugly Americans, where the social worker is trying to integrate like a bunch of monsters into regular society?
No.
And a drunk wizard is like his coworker, and it's like office style stuff. It's pretty cool. He like has an affair with a demon who's like turns out to be like the devil's daughter, and he has to go down to hell and have like an awkward dinner with him. Who's going down on this really long escalator into hell. And they get really offended when he says, like, we're all trying to get along. And then everybody at dinner, like, stops and looks at him like, who's this guy? It's pretty good. And his roommate's like a zombie that keeps trying to fight the urge to eat him in the middle of the night. Right? Like, at one point, he gives him Rufalin. And then until the zombie roommate has to call his, like, AA sponsor and be like, dude, I'm staring at my roommate. I really want to eat his brains. And then the guy on the other line, he's like, what are you doing? Are you getting like excited by what I'm telling you? Like, it's pretty good. It's really funny. Ugly American. Only
isn't
two
the main
seasons.
Character's name like Lily White because he's like the whitest character in the world.
Oh, I forget what his name is. It's like Mark or Steve or something. It's pretty plain. But
I thought it was.
You can actually watch that on. It's on the CBS All Access. Has a bunch of the old Comedy Central stuff, and all the Reno 911s, the old Reno 911s. So, and Beavis and Butthead. The other thing I watched was Mando season 2 just dropped. Mandalorian season 2 just dropped. It's got one episode.
Oh, I've been
spoilers. I haven't watched it yet.
I'm not spoiling it. I'm just going to say this. Like, the Mandalorian Adventures.
You're doing week by week.
I'm not going to spoil it. I'm just going to spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil it. But the Mandalorian, I think that Jon Favreau, who created it, does most of the writing, pops in every once in a while to do like the season openers and the closers. And is like overseeing the whole arc of the Star Wars Mandalorian series on Disney Plus. He must have watched Westerns TV shows like Gunsmoke. Essentially, and I was trying to write this with Dave a few years ago. We're trying to write like an outer space podcast, you know, like a fictional podcast. But it was going to be like a Marshall in outer space. Like essentially, that's what the Mandalorian's doing. Like there's a town with a problem. He's got to solve that problem. And then he also has like his other story going on, you know, in the background. But it's like a town has a problem. He goes to the town, solves the problem, moves on to the next town. It's Gunsmoke.
Every week
in space.
It does that, right?
Every week, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that's making me mad is like, as a streamer, they're not doing the binge watch thing where they're releasing all the episodes. They make
they
you literally
that.
Stay attached at the hip.
Yeah.
No, they did.
Yeah.
Or they do
I'm sorry, but I'm kind of agreeing with that because it stretches out the suspense of a show.
I agree. It makes me more interested.
Like, people, they just did that with The Boys, and it got a lot of backlash, but he's like, you know, hey, this is how TV was 7 years ago. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Well, so you like that model. You like that model where they're just giving you breadcrumbs. You're like, you don't want all the, give me everything now and let me consume it on my own.
I tend to feel like I get more into it if I have to watch it week by week, where if I do it once, within like 8 hours, then I'm just done. And a week later, I'm like, oh, what show did I watch again?
Actually, now that I think about it, that's our model too. We want everybody to listen and watch every week.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah, every week. You can listen to the old ones and binge. If you're behind the times, you can binge.
Yeah. But
when, like, let's say you have 10 frozen cheeseburgers. Do you put them all in the microwave at once and consume all of them? Or do you, you know, you eat one a day?
I'd feel pretty sick after that. Yeah.
Although I know I want to tie something John just said, even though we're way past Sean Connery, just to slip in another movie. John said air or Marshall in space, and Sean Connery was an air marshal or Marshall in space. Check that movie out.
Great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Didn't the villain have syphilis
or something?
Well, he was going around like killing space hookers. Like, no lie, they were space hookers.
No, it was. Yeah, it was killing like
It was like a crazy space serial killer cop movie.
But it was based upon Western style, Western stuff too, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah, like, it was basically like, I think he called it like High Noon in Space or something
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Well, we could be here all night talking about Sean Connery, but we hope you felt good while you listened or watched this episode. Binge Watchers will be back next week with another feel-good movie. We're actually kicking it to our boy, Double A. Adam, what is our selection for next week's feel-good movie?
We're going to be watching a Taika Waititi movie who brought you some pretty amazing things. Thor Ragnarok. He brought us other films.
What are we doing?
Sorry, I'm blanking.
What is it? Yeah. JoJo Rabbit?
You literally could have just told him what to watch for next week.
Yeah, Hunt for the Wilder
Beast. Actually, I could have ruined it for you. I'm sorry. I don't know. Yeah.
Is it called Hunt for the Wilder Beast or Hunt for the Wilder People? What is the name? What is
Hunt
the name?
Hunt for the Wilder People, not Hunt for
the Hunt for the,
Hunt
Wilder,
for the Wilder Beast.
Oh, nice.
No, it's about a troubled kid that gets a bond with his his stepdad, and they get lost in the bush together. And it's a really sweet movie. It has so many good feels.
It's the the kid from Deadpool 2. The kid who has the fireball powers from Deadpool 2. He plays the kid in this movie.
Adam, good pick.
I've been wanting to watch this,
so I have no idea what I've heard. It's great, so I can't wait to watch it, actually. That's a really good pick. I've heard good things.
Go into it not really knowing what to expect. I didn't know what to expect. Somebody just told me to watch it, and I watched it, and then I couldn't wait to show it to someone else. And then I watched it with someone else, and then watching it with someone else. And now I'm going to watch it again.
I'm excited to watch it with you guys.
Nick, take us out.
Yo, everything got real. It was a good show. I can't wait to watch Life of the Wilder Beast next week. Stuff got real.
We'll do a title correction.
I had to ruin that title. I'm sorry. Life of the Wilder Beast. Whatever it is.
Beast of the Southern Wild.
Oh, man. You set it up. Thank you.
Nice.